Today's date is June 21st, 2010. I'm Patsy Colbert, and I'm at the History Center interviewing Mr. Lewis Mitchell today. And if, Mr. Mitchell, if we could, we'd just begin, if you can tell me when and where you were born.
I was born in Dieball, Texas, in the old Red Town section.
And when were you born?
September 3rd, 1944.
And tell me what the Red Town section, where that's located.
It was a section of shotgun houses combined with company houses. Our house number was 613.
You still remember that?
I can take you to the spot right today where it is, where the house was.
And using some street reference as today, kind of give me the location.
Elm Street.
Elm Street.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the current Elm Street would be Red Town section?
Right.
Okay.
Matter of fact, the whole Elm Street, Neil Pickett, all of that is the Red Town section.
Okay. Were there a lot of houses in that Red Town section?
God, yes. Shotgun houses and what have you.
What about businesses?
The only business they had there was Wide Store, Hall's Grocery, and Marshall Grocery. Where Wide Store was is where the Peterson house is now, Wolfie Peterson, that home. Where the Marshall Store was where Church by Christ Jesus is sitting now, where formerly the old family affair. Where the Hall Store was right across the street from the Temple Primary Elementary School.
Okay, so these businesses in this same area, 1944 area, as a kid growing up.
Before my time, probably.
Okay.
And we had water, but the thing about it was when the water would get cut off, get messed up, they had a well down by the Marshall Store. Everybody from around would come with their jugs and bottles to get water out of that well. And it was an old cistern. You drop the bucket, you get the water.
Oh.
Yes.
Now, did the Red Town section and those houses were torn down when they built the housing authority?
Oh, some of them
were.
Or
some of them before that?
And a lot of people moved out and moved to what was called the quarters, because the houses that was in the quarters section was a little bit larger because families were increasing. And you could rent a house for $6 a month through the company.
But what you consider the quarters would be a separate from the Red Town section?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, see, they had Pipeline, Red Town, and the quarters.
Okay.
The quarter section is where the plywood mill sits now. Right next to the Diebold Cemetery was the pipeline. And from Shallow Baptist Church, it was one street you could stand in Shallow and look straight down both sections.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow.
And across from there was the Rogers Cafe nightclub that had a skating rink in it, and where part of the Temple Elementary Primary ball playing ground is. That's where the ballpark was located.
Right. Okay. All right. And who were your parents?
Mr. and Mrs. Lewis Mitchell Sr.
Okay. And what did your father do for a living?
My father worked on the separator for Temple Inland, Southern Pine at the time, and his foreman was Joe Bob Hendricks.
Okay. Did your mother work?
My mother taught school prior to marrying my father. After she married, one child born, she never taught again.
Did she teach here at Dieball?
No.
Okay. And what's your educational background?
I graduated high school here in Dieball. I'm a graduate of Prairie View A&M University. I did my graduate work at Texas Tech University, Wayne State University, and at SFA.
Okay. And what year did you graduate from H.G. Temple?
1961. Matter of fact, my class was the first class to graduate from the current gymnasium that sits over there now.
That's when they built the new gym that year.
I have built the gym.
Oh, did you?
Because Mr. Massey hired a bunch of we young men, young boys at the time, to make a little school money during the summer. The poles that sits as guards around the gym, we have dig some of the holes for those poles that's out there now.
Oh, great. Wow. And so you would have started to school in about 1949 or so, like your first grade year?
I think I started prior to that because, as I was telling you the other day, my nephew, who was older than me, my parents reared him, was already in school. And I was having a fit to go to school. So my mom said, I'm just tired of you. So she sat down and scribbled this note to Mrs. H.C. Kenyon. And I never forget, she took a sheet of Big Chief paper and wrote the note on it and gave it to my nephew, who gave it to Mrs. Kenyon when I went to school. And I've been in school ever since. I was one of the youngest graduates they had at H.C. Temple.
How old were you when you graduated?
16.
Wow. So you were just 16. And how did that happen to be so young? Because you started so young?
I guess so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you, was Miss Kenyon your teacher?
My first grade teacher. The love of my life.
Oh. Well, tell me something about the Kenyons, because we know they were early educators here in Diwall before Professor Bradley.
The Kenyons were very community-oriented. There was an old joke about Professor Kenyon. Instead of saying good morning, he'd say good money. But they stayed right across from the campus of H.D. Temple. Matter of fact, the home they had a house that was strictly for principals only. That house still stands right today, right behind the Temple Gymnasium over there.
Okay, and the Kenyons live there.
The Kenyons live there.
Okay,
and I put it like this: Miss Kenyon was more of a mother figure than a teacher, because I think all kids, if Miss Kenyon was your teacher, you fell in love with Miss Kenyon.
Oh.
And now Mr. Kenyon, from what I can understand from kids or up to old, Mr. Kenyon was a disciplinarian.
Okay.
He was a disciplinarian. He reminded me so much, Mr. Master reminded me so much of Mr. Kenyon. Mr. Kenyon always had a cigar in my, but I never saw it lit.
Huh.
Mr. Massey was the same way. Mr. Massey would take a cigar and put a match to him in, but I never saw it lit.
Now, at the time that you started to school, around 48 or so, mm-hmm. and you had Miss Kenyon as she would have been your first grade
right.
teacher,
mm-hmm.
how many teachers were at the Diwall Colored School at that time frame? Can you remember?
We were all in about two buildings. Miss Kenyon, Miss Sibley, Miss Ruby Simmons, Mr. Court, Miss Kenyon. I would say about six.
Okay. And how large was the school then, student-wise? Do you have any guess or any remembrance?
I would say. They had about 75 or 80 kids at school at that time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you actually attended school in the old Diwall
yes.
Colored School.
Yes.
Can you describe the school for
yes.
me?
Yes. It was a big white building, and they had two rooms where you could take the partition out, and they would make an auditorium. So whenever the bell would ring, they used the old-fashioned clanger for assembly. The partition would go down, so everybody would be sitting in those two rooms to hear whatever they had going on, whether it would be a play, whether someone was giving an orientation, whether Mr. Kenyon was talking. The playground was adjacent to all of this, swing, slide. Matter of fact, I remember I was running under the swing one day, and Arnett Williams came over, and I got hit right in the back of my head. They had a water fountain that was made up like a troll, but it was faucets to it.
Oh.
We didn't have to pool the water. We had running water, you know, for faucets.
Was that inside the school
outside,
or outside? Like on the playground?
Right, on the playground. And we also had... We didn't have a cafeteria, but people could bring their lunches or what have you. But one of the things they did, when they made sure we had recess, which schools don't do that anymore, and picnics and field trips.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you go home for lunch?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Matter of fact, we live within shouting distance of the school.
Okay.
I've never been in a school bus in my life while I was in school.
Did you go home at the same time that the mill workers would have went home for lunch from the whistle being blown?
Sometime I'd meet my daddy going home, yes.
When they, did they just ring the bell and for the kids to be dismissed, or
yes.
Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what equipment did you have on the school ground then? You mentioned swings. Was that all
that
y'all had?
Slide and a seesaw.
Oh.
And jump rope, and guard, marbles, jack playing, all that kind of stuff.
All those fun things.
Yeah.
And what activities did you participate in school as far as sports, like on up into your later years of school,
I was basketball, football. I tried my hand at baseball, but I never could get it right.
Well, you're so tall, I just assumed that you played basketball and was on that famous Temple Tiger team.
No, that was after my time.
Oh, okay.
See, when I played basketball, we didn't have a gym. We played on the ground.
Right.
When they would have a basketball game or a tournament, they would get brown, which you might call butcher paper, and wrap it around the playing field so if you didn't get in, you couldn't see.
Oh, what do you mean the playing field? How did they do that? From the fence?
The ground, the baseball, the basketball ground.
Uh-huh.
They would wrap paper
around it. So that if you didn't pay, you couldn't see.
No, you couldn't see. But they had the bleachers there.
Okay.
Matter of fact, when we weren't playing basketball, which was a lot of things we did on recess time, we'd be up on the bleachers and run them and all that stuff.
Okay. And how much do you have to pay to get in the game?
Probably that time about a dime or a nickel.
Now, are you talking about your high school days?
I think
Or are you talking about more when you were younger?
A high
child?
School or...
When they wrapped the field,
it was
the court.
When I did that. We didn't start... Before we got a gymnasium at H.G. Temple, all of the basketball games were played at the Dye Bowl gymnasium, which was on the campus of the primary school then.
Okay.
And,
so if y'all had tournaments and games, they played over there?
Yes.
Okay.
Coach Ross would run us to death up and down those gyms, those bleachers.
Okay. Now, you said you graduated in 1961.
Right.
How many classmates did you have in your graduating class? And can you recall their names in your class?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
There were 18 of us in the class. Out of that 18, 12 of us went to the same college, basically at the same time.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Matter of fact, Marja Harrell was one of my classmates.
Okay, Miss Margie.
Mm-hmm. And see, I was the youngest in the class, and they still don't. When we get together at affairs, this guy, and I say our class get together, someone's going to inadvertently bring that up.
About your age?
About me being young. You always just got this. I always said I had my way. I said, yes, I did. And when we got to junior high, Mr. Jeffro became our sponsor. Our homeroom teacher, so to speak. That's another thing. See, after you reached a certain age, you had a homeroom teacher.
Okay. Would that be more like high school or?
Junior high.
Junior high age? Okay.
Yes.
So, first it was Dalbaugh Colored School.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know that at some point they began accreditation process in 1942. We're not for sure exactly how long that took, but we're assuming a couple of years because we know that the first graduating class was around 1944. But can you remember in your elementary grades, you know, did the school before accreditation, if it just went, or did you hear any your parents speak about the school before accreditation?
Yes, I heard my mom talk about some of the younger people that were of high school age had gone to Dunbar in order to finish.
Okay. So did the Dalbaugh Colored School just go to 8 grades or 9 grades, do you think?
Yeah, and see, in the interim there, no one ever met. See, Dalbaugh at one time had a female principal.
Oh, really? Who was that?
Mrs. Daisy Mark. She's now deceased.
Daisy Mark, M-A-R-K?
M-A-R-K.
And when was she at the school?
In 1938, 1939, somewhere along. And I found a report card that my sister had when she was, and it was signed by Miss Daisy Mark.
Okay.
That was in 1938, 1939 or something.
Well, we'd like to see that. We'd certainly like. I have not heard of that name before.
Yes.
We're aware of, you know, Professor J.W. Hogg, who was the early mm-hmm. teacher, and then Mr. Hurdle, the Hurdle family, mm-hmm. Mr. Kenyon. And then there was a Mr. Davis just for a couple of years.
That's Billy Davis's father. He called someone the other day. I said, good grief.
Was he still living?
His son is.
Oh, the son, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so now you're saying there was a Mrs. Mark
Mrs. Mark.
The principal
mm-hmm.
for just a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know Professor Bradley came around 1938, 1939,
somewhere along there after
Professor Davis.
Now, he, well, what I can understand about, and I, well, I did have the opportunity to meet Mr. Bradley.
Okay, you did meet him.
I was in Prairie View at the time, and I was working in the Department of Education, and Mr. Bradley, well, see, Mr. Bradley came out of a family of educators from, you know where he's from, don't you?
Someone told me his wife was from Corrigan, but I'm not sure about him, where he
Alto.
Was from. Alto, okay.
Is one of them still living up there in Alto?
No. Okay.
And he had a sister. I didn't realize that one day I was going to have to deal with his sister. She was a Mrs. Frankie B. Ledbetter. She taught English at Prairie View. And so I was in the education office one day doing some filing, and so this gentleman came in. He said, I would like to see Mrs. Frankie Ledbetter. I said, so Mrs. Craig said, so Mitch said, and she upstairs? I said, yes, she's up there. He looked at me, he said, I said, sir, may I tell you? He said, yeah, my name is C.O. Bradley. I looked at him, I said, I've heard you before. Where have you heard me from? I said, oh my. I said, you used to be a principal. Where I came from, he said, where'd you come from? I said, I'm from Dalbaugh, and pardon my French. He said, I be.
Wow.
He said, what's your name? And I told him, he said, you're not Big Lewis' son. I said, I'm his old son. He said the same word again. I said, well, they told me that you were very outspoken, but everyone spoke so highly
yeah.
of that man.
He did a lot, you know, for H.G. Temple School, especially getting it accredited. The accreditation, so they could, you know, actually have a graduating class,
and
he really improved the school, according
yes,
to what we hear.
But, like they had back in the day, they had girl basketball, boy basketball. They had segregation then.
Right.
No, I'm not talking about race wise. I'm talking about when the kids go off play something, boys get on this side, girls on that side. With him walking out on the bus, they had a bus. And he dropped the boys off. He didn't care where he dropped them off. But girls, he would pull up to your door and wait until someone opened that door, either with their lamp on. Or, yes.
Oh. That's neat. Mm-hmm. So you had the opportunity to meet him, actually.
I had the opportunity to meet Mr. C. Obrecht. Then I didn't realize I was going to have to take his sister in college. I was in a class she taught, literature.
Now, who was... So you went your first through eighth grades there, and and you named some of the teachers earlier. Miss Kenyon actually taught you, and then Miss Sibley.
Miss Sibley.
And who else were some of your elementary teachers?
Miss Ruby Simmons, a lady named Mrs. Ballard. And another lady, Miss Johnson, Miss Henderson, was my elementary teacher.
Okay. And then when you got to the junior high years, you still went to, by that time, it was HG Temple.
I still had Ruby Simmons, Inez Sibley. Then I had E.A. Miss Gilbert. I had
so the same teacher,
George Crane. I had Mr. Lacey taught health for our class. Mrs. Webb, and another Mrs. Bradley. She was the music teacher.
So some of them, they taught multiple classes.
Yes,
then.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Okay.
And so under your high school years in 1961, your principal was Mr. Massey.
Uh-huh.
Okay, tell me about Mr. Massey. What do you remember about him?
Where shall I start? Mr. Massey was a dynamic mathematician. Although the principal, you'd have math in all of your class, but when you became a junior or senior, Mr. Massey taught you math. And he was so good that he could be sitting up there and you'd be working and saying, telling him what you're equating. He said, "That's wrong." He wouldn't even be looking at it. And he told us once, say, "You know what? Say, you all are the worst students I ever had in my life. I'll be so glad when you all graduate." Which, well, he wasn't lying. We were bad.
Uh-oh.
But the thing about it, we were smart enough that when it came time to pick the valedictorian and salutatorian, they'd put half of us in the class to figure out who's going to be it.
Oh, yeah. And how did they figure that out?
By testing.
Okay, and who was the valedictorian?
Barbara Moses and Lenny Hunt. Barbara Moses and I are a retired military person lives in San Antonio, Texas. Lenny Hunt and I in Bristol, Virginia.
And who was the salutatorian? Did they have a salutatorian?
Lenny was a salutatorian.
Oh, okay, okay.
But see, Barbara's family and my family were just like, well, Barbara and I refer to each other as brother and sister.
Oh, wow. And now when you graduated, you said y'all were the first graduating class
in the gymnasium there.
In the new gym. Did they have the ceremony in the new gym?
God, yes. With Dr. James Ward from Tyler, Texas.
You haven't forgotten that, have you?
How could you sit there, where the deal seniors, out in the cold career. He just repetitive. We're not going to be anywhere on this man and stop talking. And I'll tell you another comical thing about that. Now that nowadays, you know, they have prior to graduation, the seniors go. When we graduated, a lot of our parents said, "Don't let 12 o'clock catch you out of the house." Now, they weren't playing.
Right.
But one thing about the teachers and the parents worked cohesively. When the parents would let you leave home and go to school, the teachers took over as disciplinarians. And I never forget this teacher, Miss Webb. We stayed right next to school. She stopped by every day to give a report. Miss Ruby Simmons would catch the men coming from the meal that had passed right by her house. She'd be standing at the gate.
Wow.
Now, don't say that teacher lied on you. Don't ever say that. Because it's going to be worse. See, the black community held the teachers in the highest of esteem. Because besides being teachers, they were parents.
Right.
They were parents.
That's right. And you were taught to respect them then, too.
A lot more than some of these kids are today, God Almighty.
Now, we spoke of this just a little bit ago about when H.G. Temple acquired their accreditation, and we know that Professor Bradley started on that around in 1942. Did you ever hear any stories or talk about how he went through that process?
Yes,
and how long it took?
It took him a while because Professor Bradley went out and made up classes, like kids that, I say made up, that sounds wrong, like young men that quit school and what have you. Mr. Bradley set out and went and got these kids, enrolled them in school, and made them stay in school.
He went out and recruited?
Yes, kids that were still of school age.
Okay.
We just refused to go to school. So Bradley, when I made them go to school, build up the school census.
Was that for them to get the numbers that it was
not only to get
required,
the number,
probably?
But these kids weren't doing anything. They were too young to go to work at the sawmills and hauling logs. So he made sure those he got stayed in school and got an education.
How did he go about doing that and keeping them interested there? Do you know?
Well, from what I can hear, Mr. Bradley was very persuasive in a number of ways. Like, he'd give it to father of the children. A lot of the fathers worked at sawmill. On Friday night and Saturday night, they'd go out. They knew that Mr. Bradley's right there with them.
Okay.
Just use psychology on
And commit. So he became their friend,
yeah,
I guess.
He and my dad were real good friends. Real good friends. And convinced, get these kids in school.
Okay.
And instill them, say, education is going to be the only thing to get them into society, so to speak, as far as learning. And under Mr. Bradley's leadership, they had a school for veterans.
Okay.
Veterans had returned to dive all after World War II, or Korean War. Well, they had a teacher for that. That was
okay.
Mrs. Bradley.
Mrs. Bradley?
Mm-hmm.
So after they went off to the service and came back,
the young
they could
men
go,
that came back, yes,
they could go back to school.
Uh-huh.
And he had a special program for them to graduate.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Like I say, we know that possibly 44 or 45 was the first graduating class. So, it took him a couple of years to get the accreditation. And just wondered if you had any, knowledge of that how he went about it.
He go out and conscript kids.
Just recruit children.
Yeah, you're going to school.
Well, that's great.
And a lot of kids that can remember Mr. Bradley, but they're so thankful that he did what he did.
Right. It really turned their life
because
around,
They never would have become the men and women that they are today. Although, they're not older than I am, but they are still thankful.
Did you hear any stories that you remember of how they chose the name H.G. Temple for the school?
Because when they were building the school, Arthur was nowhere in the picture.
Right, this was before he came as general manager.
Henry Temple was the guy in charge.
Right.
And they named the school after him because he had donated so much of the land, timber to build school, and buildings there on the campus.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's there's a newspaper article, that goes along with that. I just wondered if you had heard anything.
Matter of
different.
Fact, the church that I belong to today, I've been there for over 50 years. Henry Temple donated the lumber to build that church.
And which church is that?
Church of the Living God. Although it's no longer in there, it's a big brick church. But we stayed in it for years and years, and that church at the time sitting next to the cemetery.
Okay. And we know that they got a new school was built in 1953.
Right.
And so you would have been in school then. So tell me something about the new school when you got to go to school
it
there.
It was so funny. Being in the black school, how should I put this delicately? It was such a exciting thing to see an inside bathroom.
Okay. So the Dalbaugh Colored School had outhouses And the new school had indoor, had restrooms. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that was a big change, wasn't it?
Not only that, but another change, the system of bell ringing was all electronic. It didn't have any more of the hand clanging bell and what have you.
Okay.
You could press a button and that bell would ring and what have you. The only clock in my elementary day, maybe a teacher had a clock on the desk, but in this school, it was a big clock sitting right in the hallway. Now, Mr. Mass, every morning, would be standing right under that clock.
Make sure you were there on time.
Well, not only that, but he had some of his teachers, Miss Gibb and Miss Emma, they would be monitoring that clock as well.
And he expected you to be there, didn't he?
Another thing, a lot of the teachers they had when we went to the new school, they took on the role of being hall monitors and all of this stuff. And which nowadays you can pay a teacher to do it. Don't say, I'm a mayor, we get into a fight, don't run in the bathroom. That was nothing. Oh, do it, come on here. Miss Gibber probably be in there, Miss Sibley. Oh, yes. But see, nowadays, you know, you can't do things like that.
Right, that's right. Now, do you remember H.G. Temple's school had yearbooks?
Yes. Matter of fact, Saturday, I had called Maddie Blunt Friday and asked her about some books. She said, yeah, I got some. I said, may I look through them? And I was telling Marge, I said, Margie, when I sit there Saturday, I see history, history, history. I saw pictures of me, I think when I was in the fifth grade. And
so did she bring them Saturday to the Juneteenth celebration?
She brought it to me at the center there, and I went through them and gave them back to her. But I was so surprised in 52, 53 somewhere, they had the rhythm bands. Little kid with a little zong playing.
Right.
And Miss Webb was one of the teachers. And I kept looking, and I said, this is Charles Hardy. Solomon Moses. I said, good grief.
Now, what years were these yearbooks that she had?
The one, 67 or something. But I don't know where they had pictures in there from 53 and what have you.
Right, some older pictures, yes, sir. Well, the only two that we've ever seen are a 1955 and a 1967. Mm. The 67 is more like just a memories, and there's older pictures in there, too. But
I saw a picture of me when I was in college in that book.
Were there more than just those two that she had?
She brought me three of them.
Okay. Well, maybe we can borrow those from her sometime. That'd be great. Right. What about the trophies from H.G. Temple School?
I'm still working on that.
Okay. Because we know that there were a lot of trophies.
God, were they ever? Were they ever?
But we've never found any of them.
The last account I had of those trophies, they were up in the attic part of the community building.
Okay.
And as soon as I can...
Well, maybe you can track those down for us.
Well, see, when I talked to Marty Saturday, I said, Marty, you don't ever stay here. I said, I'll call and call. And then she told me, see, Marty's husband's been real ill.
Yeah, that's what we understand.
And she said, well, I've been taking Arnett back. I said, okay, I can understand it. But I'm going to have to go down there. I said, give me the key. I think I still know how to go up in that attic.
You're right. Well, good. Maybe you can find that out for us. Is there anyone in your school days that made a lasting impression?
Oh, yes. There were a young man and a young lady. In school, this fella, he and I were always competitive. We both graduated together. We went through kindergarten, first grade, all the way through. Went off to college. He went to Prairie View. I went to Prairie View. He went joined military. I didn't. But we joined different organizations at college camp. And if Alton joined, I had to join too. We became scouts together. And when graduation came, we knew we had to part. Alton ended up in New York. I ended up in a classroom in Navasota, Texas. And I think from the time of graduation, I laid eyes on Alton in 83 or 84. I think that's when he came back. His mom had passed away. And she was our den mother in the first scout troop I ever belonged to. And the other young lady was a girl named Jo Evelyn Jordan. She was a daughter to Mrs. Lily Odom, which was an Odom family. And I never forget, she was such a discipline problem. And Mrs. Kenyon got word from her mom to come out there. Well, instead of taking Jo Evelyn to another part of the room to discipline, she didn't. She did it right there in the classroom. But Jo Evelyn is one of the most high-powered lawyers in Milwaukee right today.
Wow, that's wonderful.
And there was another young lady that had a real, real heart. Her name was Fannie Lee Butler. And I was on the foregoing. Fannie Lee had passed away until earlier this year. I was talking to someone. I said, Fannie Lee's not dead. I said, what? I said, no, she's not dead. So her cousin said, I've got a number. I said, give it to me. Give it to me right now. I went home, sit down, and I called this number. I said, there's no telling who's going to answer. Well, this lady answered. I said, I need to speak with a Fannie Lee Butler. She said, what did you say? I said, Fannie Lee Butler. She said, I'm Fannie Lee Butler. She said, where are you from? I said, she said, you had to be from Diabolo if you know me by family, but it's been over 50 years since I've seen her.
And she was a student that you went to school with?
She was
a classmate?
She's reared by her grandmother who, Lord have mercy. But she's trying to be a remarkable young lady. Remarkable.
Well, that's wonderful. We know from the Free Press article that in 1962, Coach Herbert Allen and Coach Willie Ross resigned from H.G. Temple School. Do you have any details about that, why they resigned?
Well, I think they knew integration was impending. And Coach Allen had just about gotten burned out. Plus, rumor had it that there was probably some animosity between he and the principal as to why he left. And Ross left because where Ross's high school coach was director of athletics at Lufkin Dunbar, Elmer Red.
Right.
And Ross being the outstanding football player he was in Art, then at Texas Southern, the door was open, so he walked on in.
And so he left H.G. Temple?
He left H.G. Temple.
Mm-hmm. And where did he go after that? Did he go to Dunbar?
Dunbar. Then? Where he's still not at Dunbar. He's at Lufkin.
At Lufkin. Mm-hmm. Okay. What race relations did you experience in Diabolo?
Basically, none. Now, I'm serious. Now, people say, yeah, I said, I always lived. Now, I've never lived in a segregated neighborhood. That sounds strange coming from me here in Diabolo. As long as I can remember, from the time I got up and run around until I got ready to go off to school, we always had white neighbors.
Okay, so Red Town, this little Red Town section was more of an integrated section.
I see the Havards, the Caps, Havards, Caps. I know all those kids. Matter of fact, I see them right today. The Moses, they moved on to Lufkin, but the Moses family stayed right on the corner. Neil Pickett and Beach, I think. They were white.
Okay.
Right down the street from my house, the Norrises lived there, which was Marshall Grace's parents. Right on down in the Havards live down there, and see Tommy Havard Senior. He and I used to We used to play around out in the woods, shooting guns and other stuff. Yeah. Matter of fact, I ran into him last Sunday morning.
Really? So
he said,
you...
He said, what you doing, man? I said, I'm retired now. He said, me too. I said, I'm going to be right. He said, me too.
So you grew up around around white community?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever experience any problems with...
None whatsoever.
With it?
I never went to, you know, school with... And see, when my mom, as my father, and then they moved into the public housing project, there were a family of Mitchells stayed right down the street. Okay? But these Mitchells are white.
Oh.
And, matter of fact, Mrs. Mitchell, I love her dearly. She lives there in Lufkin. And when my brother began to play ball, high school ball, and talk about going to college, I was getting all the they would go down to Miss Mitchell's house, past my mom's house, go down there. So she'd come up there bringing the mail, and she and my mom had to think they were just going to share.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's neat.
Yeah. And I run into her sons every night and always, as high as your mother. How is Miss Mitchell doing?
Oh, that's neat. Now, were you still living here in Diboll during the integration years of the school system?
No, I wasn't. I was in school at the time, but I stayed abreast of it. Because,
okay.
See, I had a younger brother that was in school here, Mac.
Okay, Mac Mitchell. Okay.
And I was, you know, staying in touch with him.
Okay. How did you come to know about integration?
Well, prior to my... See, I used to work for housing here in Diboll.
For the Diboll Housing Authority?
I was the first director of recreation, what have you.
Director of recreation?
Under,
oh, okay.
Under Woodrow Woods.
Under Mr. Woods, okay.
And see, Marja Harrell, I'd gone down there and got hired. And so he asked me one day, he said, Lewis, I need a secretary. I said, you do. He had his wife. There. He said, you know anyone? I said, yes, I do. I said, this young lady worked for the school system, and I don't know whether she's going to work. He said, you think you can get her to come in? I said, let me see. So I went up to Marge's house, and we laugh about it right today. I went to Marge's door, and Marge was mopping her floor. And she said, Lord, I don't believe it. Here come Lewis Mitchell to my house. I said, yeah, and I'm coming through the back door. So she said, well, I said, look, Marge, I said, that gentleman that run the house, thought Mr. Wood, want to know if you'd be interested in a job. I said, secretary, I said, I don't lie to me. I said, I know you got secretarial skills. I know where you went to school. I know what you've done. She said, when did you want to see me? I said, whenever you can. She said, give me about 10 minutes. Marge came. I think Marge's interview maybe lasted 5 minutes. 40 years later, she's still down there.
Now, what year were you director of recreation under Mr. Woods?
I came, I think I went there in 66, 67, somewhere on there. Because I did for, I think, 3 summers. I would do it during my time away from school.
Okay, so you graduated from H.G. Temple in 61. Mm-hmm. You left here and went to Prairie View.
Went to Prairie View.
And then you came back in the summers and did the recreation program.
And I enjoy it. And I still see kids right today. They can remember we used to have dances down there. That's right.
Okay. Well, 1965 was the first year of freedom of choice for the Diboll school mm-hmm. system. And then full integration was the fall of 68. But what were your feelings about integration?
I was all for it.
And how did your brother feel about integration, knowing that he was in the school system and going to be changing schools? Do you remember sharing anything with
him? As long as his buddies were going. See, in my church, had a lot to do with this. Family were told, you know, for the betterment of the community, for bettering your kids, send them up. So a bunch of those women in that mission society got together. Those kids, their kids, they were going to that school. You're going to be the best you can. You might be not the best dressed, but you won't look like you're poor. So you're going, nothing to be said.
So it was actually emphasized through the church,
yes,
about integration,
yes,
and preparing the students
for
that.
Diboll had always been a community where people, they got along, white or black. Now, one thing I can say about Diebold in this respect, if you got down sick, hurt, Diebold rallied to you. I can say that in sense, because my father died when I was 14.
Oh.
He worked for Temple. And had not been for Diebold people, I wouldn't have been where I am right today.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The late Jimmy Ferguson, Rhoda Faye Chandler. Yes. When my dad died, Rhoda Faye Chandler handled all of the arrangements and everything else, getting the body brought back from my... Yes.
Well, that would have been around 1958 or so if you were 14.
Got it right on. Uh-huh.
So, and what did your mother do after that? I mean, did she work for the company?
No.
Or they just...
No, she had five kids to raise.
Oh, okay.
And I never, we had a run, 1 year after we all got up some side and we were working, we'd gone through college and all this type of stuff, we decided to give Mom a vacation. But she had this sister in California, place that she hadn't seen her. So Mom, excuse me, we'll send you to California. She said, yeah, I might bring y'all back there. I said, hold it. I said, you better make sure he's got a round trip ticket.
That's neat. So the company and the community's always been good to your family.
Diebold has been that way with everybody. When I tell you, when Diebold brought the first group of Mexicans, I was working at housing then.
Okay, that was in the 60s. Yeah.
Matter of fact, we were told that we were going to get this group of people. Don't ask any questions. Don't fill out any forms. Give them the apartment number and a key. This was supposed to have transpired on a Tuesday. We were sitting around there waiting 5 o'clock and no one showed up. Wednesday, we was going to leave early. Somebody said, no, you can't. So look out in the parking lot. There'd be 53-foot trailers out there. And Hispanic people said, oh, good God Almighty. And good old Jesse Melendez, good old, was the interpreter for us. We would bring them in the office. Matter of fact, I see some of the kids now, Hispanic kids. I said, oh, I remember when your people moved here.
Is that the very first group that they brought up out of the valley? Mm-hmm. I don't have the exact date right here in front of me, but it was in the late 60s.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I believe there were 13 or 14 families or something like that.
There were a lot of them, I put it like that.
And so you were actually working at the housing authority then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you remember they brought them all to Diebold, and then y'all just assigned them a house number?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Put them away. And you know what? They fit right in. Wasn't no animosity, no race, none of that stuff.
Well, that's great.
Everyone got them. And I still see some of these kids right today, although they're adults and what have you. I remember you. I said, you do. Some is old and ugly as I am. But when we, I said, never mind, don't go that far back.
Did you ever know of any incidents that took place that were race-related?
Well, they said one time at Diebold High School, when the movie Roots came out of something, they had some turmoil over there. But thanks to McGilver, some of the athletes, Coach Wyatt, all that was contained right there in that school.
Okay. But in the early years of integration, in the 68, that full mm-hmm. integration year, you don't remember, it was a smooth process then. This incident you're speaking of would have been later.
Yeah, later.
Later on.
Now, there were some incidents where kids are going to be kids and saying, but it didn't result in no major turmoil or anything of that nature.
Right.
Because
what about it within the community? Were there any incidents race-related in the community at the time of full integration?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay.
Everybody got along? Got along fine. Uh-huh.
Okay. What about shopping at the commissary? Did you ever go to the commissary store?
God, yes.
Tell me about that.
You go in the commissary store and buy everything from a pair of shoes to furniture. They had a meat market in there, grocery store.
Now, do you remember going there as a small child?
Yes.
Okay. Did they have, was it set up?
It was segregated.
It was segregated. Yeah. So did you have to go into a separate area or something?
Yes, okay. But They had a guy named Lefty Vaughn who ran that store, and Hines, and postmaster named Zeddy Kelly, I think, was the postmaster. Hines was a working postmaster and a drugstore. He was a druggist.
Were you treated well when
yes.
you went there?
Okay. Most definitely. If your dad worked for Southern Pines Time, you didn't have to worry about nobody, because, now this I will say, they might have had some player haters at Southern Pines, but they kept it to themselves. Because if you mistreated a Southern Pine employee, you had hell to pay.
Okay, so the company officials didn't put up with anything.
By
there.
No means.
Okay.
And plus, they had a lawman here at the time. I forgot the man there. I saw him once. He got real old. Jay Bourne's.
Right. Yeah. He was
he
a constable
play.
Here.
He didn't play.
So everybody got along, and everybody knew what was tolerated and what wasn't tolerated.
Okay. Most definitely.
Okay. Is there anything else concerning the integration or race relations that you'd like to share with me before we move on?
Well, the only thing I can say about that, for a town of Diebold, it went real smooth.
Okay.
And this is because people had already started getting along before they came together like they are
right.
during that time. And they had that philosophy, if one person is down, people came to their rescue. Didn't matter what color you were, they did it. I can remember the times when my dad was down sick prior to his death. Joe Bob, Chester, somebody, and these are whites, would come by the house, and I often laugh about this. Me and always with a cat, and they respect me because first thing the cap was going on, but within that cap would be money.
Oh.
Miss Mitchell, we brought this for you and those children.
Oh, nice.
And do you know what Pat said? I can't get that out of myself, because any time somebody's down in need, we had a case in point. We had a young man in my church that graduated this year. And my sister told me, said, he was sitting up there just crying. I said, he's happy. He said, no. Said, they didn't buy him no invitation. I said, what? So the church was going to give a little appreciation for the graduates. So he said, well, he doesn't belong here. Well, I said, what the hell that got to do with it? I got busy. I said, is he going to school? He said, yes, good. I called a few people. I did a little arm twisting. Sonny Poole asked me, had the appreciation thing for the graduates. I said, excuse me, I got to go to the trunk of my car. I had one envelope in my coat, my suit pocket. I went to the trunk of my car. I got a 5-piece set of American Tourister luggage out of the trunk of my car.
Oh, that's nice. Well, you just never forgotten those things that people did for you and your family, and so you just continue to do that when you see a need.
My brother and I were talking about it last night. I said, I can't forget that.
No. Well, Diebold's always is very unique.
It is.
Little place, little community anyway, it's in its own way, and everybody has their own unique experiences.
That's true.
That's what makes it a great place to live, even now.
Now, they tell me they don't have a Diebold Day, Jessica. They still have those things?
Yeah, we sure Diebold Day. Well, let's talk about Juneteenth celebrations. I know that you're very involved with that. You just had a big celebration on Saturday, and you probably haven't recuperated yet. But tell me how you became involved with the Juneteenth celebrations.
How far you want me to go back?
In the beginning, just when did you get started helping with that?
As a little boy, I can remember on a Friday night when the men would get off from work at the mill, the hole would be dug. They would put the meat on and cook all night long.
Who do you remember did that cooking? Can you remember?
Yes, Albert Mitchell, my father, Louis Mitchell, Kiddo Phillips, Charlie Billy, Joe Carr. That's the number of old men.
Okay.
And they'd get everything, and the women in the community would make the salads and the breads and the cakes and what have you.
Okay.
But whenever they would get together, by midday Saturday, they never would do anything until Fresh Shiloh's choir would sing under the direction of the late Professor Jackson.
Okay. Well, we know he was a great musician.
He was, and he had that choir would sing.
So that was kind of like the kickoff of
that
the
was,
event.
That's
okay.
Right. Dave O'Neill, they'd be having the lemonade and all this type of stuff. And people within, they would come up, they'd be there all day. Then sometimes they'd have the baseball game in the baseball park. Then that Saturday night at Rogers Cafe, they'd probably have a little sock hop or something, a dance or whatever.
Okay, yes. And this is even as when you were a child?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, we couldn't go.
You couldn't go to the sock hop, huh?
My dad was very, very, very finicky. My dad, if he told you you could go somewhere, go play with another neighbor or something, you better leave when he tell you to go. Don't give him a chance to change his mind.
Now, and then as an adult, you become involved with the actual coordinating of this
coordinating
event.
Coordinating
so,
thing. And see, with
when did that start? Ever since you've been living here and become an adult?
It started when I became, for 20-some years ago, when I became the president of the Ex-Student Association here.
Okay.
We became involved in the 19th of June thing. I wasn't doing actual stuff I'm doing now. They had people, but we made sure we were involved in it.
Okay. All right. And tell me about the H.G. Temple Alumni Association, how that became formed and when.
On a rainy night in January 1988, when we became an official organization.
And how did that come about? Whose idea was it, or how did that happen?
Our group had got together, and those other schools, having reunions and whatever. See, those of us that go on college, I always made sure I would go back to my college homecoming. I was a member of the Alumni Association, and it was nice. You see people you hadn't seen. But it was nice. So we got together and decided to have a reunion. And the first reunion we had at Diabol for H.G. Temple took place the second Saturday in August 1988. And my God Almighty, the people.
I believe we have a little book from that 1988 that y'all put together.
Yes, we put together.
And so that was the first one, 1988.
The first one.
Okay.
And the late Paul Durham, oh my God, he was wonderful. He was wonderful. By helping Mr. Ligon and the committee, get everything together. And I can even tell you the first song that was played, the night of the dance. We couldn't find a place we didn't have a Civic Center. We went to Our Lady of the Guadalupe Church down at the time. The church had the big recreation thing, and Ernie Sweezer said, "Yeah, y'all can have villas, okay." And so we tried to make it, get all the replica of H.G. Temple we had. And the late Maggie McCoy had a paper mache tiger. She let us use that, and Dolores Richard, those women got in there, and that tiger looked so darn real. And I said, "What's that?" Here's a tiger on that stage. Our speaker was a graduate of Diabol, Ruth Lee Taylor. She's now a retired principal of some school in New Mexico. And so we had our little thing. Naturally, Mr. Jeffo was right there.
Now, who was on that first committee, the Alumni Association committee? The first members.
Dolores Richards, James Rome, Jim Ligon, Lorraine Rogers, myself, of course, that's fine. Earlene Benson, Mary Helen Bray, Joyce Phipps, Joyce Bray, she was, that's eight. Seems like there was another one, I believe. But that we were the one that put it together.
Put it together. And it's been, y'all still meet every year?
We, the alumni, matter of fact, I'm calling an alumni meeting for sometime this week because we got to go through everything that went, just transpired this past week.
Okay.
You see, and we do a lot of things community-wise besides our reunion thing.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. What else do y'all participate in?
We give scholarships to students that pass criteria from Dearborn High School and want to apply for a scholarship from
okay.
HG Temple. And this is the criteria is you must write an essay saying why you want a scholarship. It must be in your own writing. Can anyone help you? You must get a letter of reference, preferably two, from someone who can vouch for you. And above all, I must see that transcript.
Right.
Yeah. I
had
was shocked to death.
Privilege of helping with that a couple of years ago.
You did?
For Mrs. Gordon. Yeah, it was. She had asked me to help on the selection committee. And so, are they also involved with the Juneteenth celebration?
Yes.
Do they help you with that? Do y'all help with that too?
If they hadn't shown up Saturday, it would have been hell to tell the captain, and I would have been the captain. But we were. I was there from the time they started cutting all those cakes Saturday until they said, Lewis, all the plates going. I said, good.
Now, who does the cooking now? Do y'all have barbecue and stuff, or what?
The new breed, which I cannot give them enough credit. The new breed did a wonderful job.
Now, what is that?
That new breed Western Riders group.
A group, okay. Mm-hmm. Western Riders group, mm-hmm. Okay.
They did the barbecue and they did the, they had the front, excuse me, they furnished the DJ, all that stuff.
Now, do they do that free, or do y'all pay them to do that?
No, they did that free.
They did it
they
free.
They contribute that much out of their treasure, where we contribute so much out of our treasure.
Okay.
We make this a combined effort.
And then the community, when they come to eat, is it free, or
free.
Do they pay? Okay, it's free.
It's free.
Okay, that's mm-hmm. wonderful.
And see, my job is to make sure that the senior citizens are those people that are sure, get something to eat. That's how I bypass
okay.
Join me.
Okay, all right. Well, that's great. And we know that some of the early Juneteenth coordinators were like Mr. Kenyon
mm-hmm.
and some of Mr. Mitchell, I believe
mm-hmm.
you mentioned your dad, I guess.
And Evan Mitchell, who's that's statue over there in front of Temple's main office. That's a statue of Albert Mitchell.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He was involved
yes,
in different ones.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
okay. That's great.
Now,
we want to get to Dieball Day real quick. And we know that there were segregated Dieball Day events.
Right.
And we have photographs of 1962 and 1964 Black Queen mm-hmm. candidates for Dieball Day, and those are the only 2 years that we've found actual photographs.
Mm-hmm.
But did you have any dealings with the Dieball Day events before segregation?
Yes, I was still in high school, so I was a member of the high school marching band from H.G. Temple.
Okay.
That we would practice, oh my God, Newell J. Cox. We would practice how we were going to march in that parade.
Now, was he the band director, or something for H.G. Temple?
Yeah, prior to Mr. Cox, we had a lady named Mary Bradley.
Was she kin to Professor Bradley?
No, them to the Bradleys.
Now, they were the band teachers?
Band directors.
Band directors,
and,
okay. And what were the Temple High School colors when you were there?
Well, I was under two colors.
So you were under both colors, purple and white? And then
purple and gold. Purple and white, I'm sorry, you're right, and then green and white.
Okay.
I graduated under green and white, but I also had purple and white
okay.
as well.
Do you recall how the colors changed?
Yes, under Mr. Bradley was the purple thing. Mr. Mass dealt with it for a little while when he came. Then he changed it to the green and white.
Green and white,
mm-hmm.
okay. And so you were in the band and you participated in the Dieball Day Parade?
Right.
Okay, so when y'all participated in the parade, was it one big parade for Dieball Day?
Yes.
Okay, and so were y'all involved? I mean, how did they do the parade?
Naturally, Dive High, the all bands were together.
Okay.
We would get over there and get in line and what have you. Although by being black banging, you was on the rear, but they knew we were there.
But the white bands went first, and then the black bands. Okay, and then bands from the black school.
Right,
and then
the queens and all this stuff.
Okay,
and see then. When these actually
were all the participants from the anything from the black community, were they at the end of the parade or were they just mingled in?
They were mingling.
Oh, mingled
and see,
in.
Then
okay.
We would go back to the campus of the school. That's where we would do our celebrating, as opposed to whatever they did over here across the track, so to speak. But when they had the Saturday night affair, everybody could come, although it's still segregated because my mom and dad, they couldn't wait to see Curly Fox and Texas Ruby. I never forget that.
That was one of the early Dive-All Day events.
Uh-huh.
And they had the early ones at the Whispering Pines Park, which is now the current location of the Temple Inland office.
Mm-hmm.
But so you're saying your parents came over here to the Curly Fox show? Okay.
Uh-huh.
So the black community was welcome to come over?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they did?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Now,
you said y'all had your activities at the school. Was that before the park, Walter Allen Park, was built, I guess?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, and then after the park?
Walter Allen Park during that time was underwater. It was Conn's Pond.
Okay. So that was the Conn's Pond location?
Where the housing authority, somebody said, it's Conn's Pond. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then after the park was built, then they had the Dive-All Day segregated events at Walter Allen?
Well, I want to call them segregated events now. Because everybody shows up.
Okay. Now, how did they select the queen? Do you remember anything about the queen selection for the black community?
Yeah. Classes within the school would select the queen. You know, who would be the queen and all this type of stuff.
Was it by, we raise money.
Yes.
Did it have anything to do with money raising, too?
Money raising.
Okay.
Matter of fact, one year I was escorted for Willie Davis, for a Dive-All Day thing. My God, what year was it? I don't know.
I was going to ask you if you know when the segregated Dive-All Day events stopped and it just became one, integrated. I'm wondering if it went along with the integration of the schools.
I think it did.
Which was 68.
Well, one of the things, you have to keep in mind who was in charge of Dive-All then. If they spoke, they were like E.F. Hutton. This is the way blank, blank, blank is going to be, then about to argue with him. Now, you know who I'm talking about. Cutting Arthur.
Okay. All right. We also know that part of the big Dive-All Day events for the black community was the big Sunday afternoon baseball game during the weekend. So what do you remember about the baseball games and the baseball teams?
Oh, God. Matter of fact, one of those early black players, I still know where he lives right today.
And who is that?
His name, they call him Jelly.
I know Mr. Jelly.
He's 92 years old.
Yeah.
He did not want to believe I was who I said I was. I walked up to him one day. Now, Jelly's kids, we grew up together. We played together. They left after the boys, mother, and Jelly separated. It's been 60 years. Since we've seen each other. I saw him last year when his honor someone passed away. He lives in Chicago. He's a pharmacist. And I told my cousin, I said, when Junior comes, I said, call me. I said, if I'm asleep, let that tell him. So she comes, she said, he's on his way now. I said, what? She said, he's here. I said, she said, you come. I said, I'm on my way. I got up, put on my clothes, drove. I said, and when we, this is no lie. When I pulled up and got out of my car, he said, I don't believe it. I said, I don't either. I said, you know how long it's been? I said, don't stop at 50. He said, no, we better go on to 60.
Now, do you remember watching the ball games when you were a little kid,
yes.
The Dive-All Dragons, watching Mr. Jelly play ball and the others?
Yes.
What do you remember about the baseball games then that you want to share with me?
How Big Jim Hall would be out there playing ball and they'd be talking loud and all that, but those guys could play. Big Jim Hall, Jelly Manchely Overstreet, Sonny Boy Rollins. Oh, those guys. Mm-hmm.
Now, where was the location of the ballpark that you remember?
Over there, where right adjacent to where Shiloh Baptist Church sit right now.
Okay, on that same side of the street or across the street?
Across the street.
Across the street, okay.
Matter of fact,
that's what I understand. I just wanted to make sure.
Rome Street and Cozy Circle, that was part of the ballpark.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did it cost to go to the ball games, to those games?
Maybe a nickel or a dime, but if you caught a ball, you're going free.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They had a plank fence and mm-hmm. bleachers. And
yes. Oh, yes.
If you caught a ball, you could get in free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What other businesses do you remember in the black community as a child?
Mitchell's Cafe, Joe Diamond's Cafe, Rogers' Cafe, the Deep Berry thing, Cafe, let's see, and Number 2 Store.
Where was it located, the Number 2 Store?
Right adjacent. Where Shiloh sits here, there's a rail-type object right across from Shiloh. The Number 2 Store said right in front of it.
Across the street from Shiloh?
No, on the same side.
Same side of the street.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it's set beside Shiloh Church. Kind of more on that corner.
Uh-huh. This is where everybody would gather.
How big was the Number 2 Store?
Oh, it was large. It was large.
Is that mostly where the black people shop, community shop, rather than coming to the big commissary?
Yeah, the man that ran there was a man named Mr. Ben Bivens.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, his daughter graduated from school. I don't know what year she graduated.
Do you remember going there, and did you just charge on a ticket, or do you remember anything about the company checks or anything?
A lot of these stores had charge tickets. I remember the company checks.
Do you remember those?
Yes.
What did they look like? I mean, what do you remember about that?
They were long, and they had the timesheet attached to it.
Okay, like a regular paycheck?
Yes.
Okay.
And it had, you know, all the tax things on there that had been taken out and what have you. And then that little few cents of money they gave.
Okay.
That was it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you could take it in those stores. Because, see, we didn't have a bank then.
Now, what did you do here? You said you came back here in the 60s as director of recreation and then worked for the Housing Authority. And then what was your career, mostly your career life? What did you do?
Teaching.
Teaching? Okay. Where did you teach?
I taught in Navasota, Texas. I taught at Lufkin. And I taught in Center, Texas.
Okay. So you're a retired teacher?
Well, I'm a retired psychological assistant from Rush State Hospital.
Okay.
See, I left teaching after only 5 years. Then I went into the field of mental health due to a family, and I spent 31 years in that field.
Okay. And so where did you retire from?
Rush State Hospital.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful.
I was in charge of all the psychological examinations for the psychology department. And I would tell people, I said, I'll tell you one thing. If you get in here, you'll see me before you get out.
Well, that's great.
Yes,
that's great. What's one of your most memorable experiences growing up in Diboll? Something you want to share with us?
The Sunday evenings, my dad, he'd work. He would do a whole, and when he'd work, he might go out on Friday. But on Sunday afternoon, that was family time. That was family. Whether he'd be out in the yard playing ball with us, mother would go visit. Daddy even taught us how to dance, then listening to the radio. Back in the day, listening to Shadow Knows and all that stuff. Yes.
On the radio?
Yes.
You didn't have TV growing
didn't
up?
Didn't get TV until 1950-something. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my
Sunday afternoon is family time in church.
Oh, yes.
A lot of special memories. Yeah.
And
that's great.
Not only that, but my father had a habit, and my brother and I, we still carried on right then. My dad been dead 50-some years. No matter where Dad went, what he did, come Christmas Eve, Daddy didn't go nowhere. Nowhere. You can put a chain on him and drag him out of the house. That was for his family.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Right. And see, when my brother and I went off to college, we'd come home at Christmas time. But Christmas Eve, we wouldn't go nowhere. We'd be in the kitchen around Mama.
That's good. That's some good memories, isn't it?
they would be with me indefinitely.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Oh, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you particularly want to share with us about the, you know, history of the H.G. Temple School, history of the black community, a particular person or something that I haven't asked you about today that you want to be sure and mention?
There were so many people that was instrumental in my life. But one of the things I like, Diabol, even being the black community, Diabol was an ideal place to rear family. Diabol is very steeped in religion, where they always stress, you know, the Bible and what have you. And there have been so many people instrumental in my life. I couldn't mention them all. But I got something from every one of them. I remember when I worked for Temple prior to going off to college, there were a group of men worked out there at Temple. And E.P. Ramsey, he was my foreman. He had me on that thing they call it a dry chain, whatever they call it out there. And Fox Smith, Horace Warren, Howard Flanagan, they told me, said, "What are you doing out here?" I said, "I'm trying to go to school." And they would say, "You better go to school. Say, you have no business out here. Say, you have too much brain. Say, go make somebody." Say, and that stuck with me.
That was my next question, that even though you mentioned that, I was just sitting here and wanted to ask you, who was instrumental in seeing that you went to Prairie View?
Well, wait a minute. Let me tell you something. That goes back further than that. Besides them, the late E.A. Gilbert, she was my teacher at Temple. I was up for a scholarship that night of graduation. Some kind of way it got all miscombobulated, I don't know. And we had to take our robes back the next day. And she said, "Lewis," I said, "Well, Miss Gilbert, I was hoping I'd go to college." I said, "I don't know." She said, "Well, Lewis, if it's meant for you to go to college, you going." And that, she left it just like that. Okay. Well, I went on to work, you know. And one day, I was at work, and here come Mr. Ramsey walking real fast. "Miss Temple wants to see you." I said, "Who?" "Miss Temple." "Okay. What you want to see me for?" I said, "You know how to get an office?" I said, "No, I don't." So I went down there and showed him how to get. See, I walked in that Lottie Temple. She said, "Have a seat, Lewis." I said, "Yes." She said, "I understand you want to go to school." I said, "Yes." I said, "But I'm trying to save a little money." She said, "Well, how much would it take for you to go to school?" I said, "Miss Temple, I said, I don't know. I said, I got the paperwork for it." She said, "Bring that back by my office when you come back." Okay. Well, in the interim, Clyde Thompson was in the same office upstairs. I had to go see him. Now, what is this man? What does he want with me? At the time, Clyde Thompson was on the board of directors of Texas A&M. Okay? Big deal. I took the paperwork back to Miss Temple, like I said. I told my mother, "I don't know what's going on." She said, "Well, maybe they're going to help you out." I said, "Okay." Because at the time, you could only apply for the student loan. That was $350, but back in the 60s, that was a lot of money. I took it on up there. I went up and I visited with Clyde Thompson. The next thing I knew, "Dr. Evans wants you all at the Prairie View." "Who's Dr. Evans?" "The president of the college." "How does he know?" I said, "Just don't answer. We had to get bids for me to get ready to go to school." It was 40-some years later when I found out what happened. Talking to Miss E.A. Gilbert one day, she was coming down to one of our reunions. And she said, "When you got ready to go to school," said, "I talked to some people." I said, "And we started talking cards. Who'd you talk to?" She said, "I talked to my sister." I said, "You talking about Miss Delia Mae Hunt?" Which they were very, very tight. And Miss Hunt was very close to the president at the time of the college.
Well, that's wonderful.
I said, "Wait a minute." I said, she said, "I'm just not telling you. That was like 40-some years."
That's wonderful.
And when she passed away, I was asked to give the remark. And that's one thing I told people about her.
Helped you get to college.
She helped me get to college.
Well,
she would come down while we were in college, because there was about 8 or 10 of us in, and we'd always be hungry. So she thought.
Well, we know that there are a lot of H.D. Temple graduates that went to college, to Prairie View. And
yes.
And that's real admirable, you know, that, so, you know, I didn't know if Mr. Massey were strong toward, you know, the college and helped the students or the parents or,
see,
you know.
See, Mr. Massey was a graduate of Prairie View.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So that's wonderful that you were really encouraged to go.
The person who encouraged me most was Algernon Moses Jeffrey.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. We've interviewed him as well.
Oh, my God.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with me today that I haven't asked you about?
No. I know I sit here and talk too much.
No, that's wonderful. You've given us a lot of good information. And I really appreciate you spending time with me today for this interview.
Well, I'm glad I did. I went to work today. I said, now, what time did I tell you? I said, oh, my God. I said, I hope you be too mad if I'm too late because I'm going to get me some coffee before I get your
No, sir, that was fine. Well, thank you, Mr. Mitchell.
You're more than well. Now I've got to go.